You're listening to Work Tape, episode 160.
Welcome to this edition of the Work Tape podcast. It's your boy, Money Mitchell, Isaac Groovin Grover.
Hello, friends.
And we are concluding our deep dive into the year of 1994. We go through the landmark years and basically discuss the albums that were big at the time. And with this year, 94, I think it's one of the only episodes that I'm aware of that we've had to split into three parts because there were just too many huge albums that came out at the time. And the first episode, we talked a lot on the hip hop electronic side and kind of the blend of those genres with rock. And then the episode most recent after that, in part two, we talked more about the pop punk alternative and a little bit of some of the other forms of rock that were going on at the time, such as Cootie and the Blowfish and Dave Matthews Band as well, which definitely had a difference in comparison to a lot of the rock at the time. But now we are at the point where we have to cover one of the biggest albums of 94, and not immediately when it came out, but definitely this is an album that has grown a lot within the 30 years that it's been released. And that's Grace by Jeff Buckley. We've hinted at covering this, and no conversation of 1994 musically is complete without covering this album at this point. Some of it has to do with the whole circumstance in which, you know, Jeff Buckley passed away, you know, at a very young age. This was really the only full studio album I think he had, although there was a bunch of unreleased stuff that came out after he died, but this was the full studio album. And so there was definitely some immortalization, I think, behind that. But the album itself is great. Great guitar-oriented, almost singer-songwriter type rock.
You know, its darkness and its poppiness reminds me a lot of what Elliott Smith would do with Either Or and how definitive that record is.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of influence in there. But we previewed in the last episode his cover of Hallelujah, which got in really well known for good reason, I think. And of course, you know, there's always something to be said about the original in terms of, you know, they wrote it and all that. But I think Jeff really took it to new heights with the guitar, the vocals, just the mood of the song. It's actually the most popular, most searched guitar tab on the internet, as far as I'm concerned, actually, or on like Ultimate Guitar, which is an interesting tidbit.
Yeah, I love Grace. That's a really good title track, which is basically, as we spoke about, what Coldplay ripped off. But I just like, I like its surges. Like it has like a lot of peaks and valleys, Grace. It has a lot of dynamic instrumentation, and it's in, and there's a non-conventional aspect to it. It almost reminds me not too much of Radiohead, but I feel like Grace was a song that Radiohead, in many ways should have done.
Yeah. I hear a lot of Thom Yorke, and I hear, you know, Muse and Coldplay, you know, took a lot from this album too. So, I mean, it's hugely influential in terms of a lot of rock and other stuff as well, but a lot of rock. And, you know, Lover You Should Have Come Over is a great track as well, a great ballad that, you know, has some soulful organ in there too. So it's just a great album. And I definitely understand and can see why there is a significant place for this album amongst the music community at large, and why it's kind of a go-to album in terms of recommendations. I mean, they rank it right up there, I think, with, like, you know, and Rainbows and even a couple of other albums, you know.
It totally deserves the accolade, yeah.
Definitely worth checking out if you haven't already. Grunge. There's a lot of good grunge in here.
Can I start it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, start off, man.
So coming off the metal sound and more of the underground stuff, a little bit more toward like kind of doom metal, a little bit like, what's their name? The Melvins. But also more experimental. Jesus Lizard, they released their, I believe their fourth album, Down. The greater track on that is probably Fly on the Wall. This is their last album with Steve Albini. And so you can hear a lot of his, you can hear a lot of his sound. It's just, it's Steve Albini throughout the whole album. Now, this one's not as big as Goat, which is from 91, and then 92 with Liar. So Down is not really a popular Jesus Lizard pick, but it's a classic underground sound. And, you know, here we are at 94. I think Shot was their one in 1996. So that would be their fifth record. I think Shot is probably more appealing to the masses. Goat is clearly their big one. But Down is, I'm down with Down. I don't know if you've ever listened to Jesus Lizard much.
I have not, but I think along with, what was the other recommendation for the last one? The Jawbreakers or something? Or
Yeah, Jawbreaker, 24-hour revenge.
Yeah.
I think it's Revenge Therapy. But yeah, that one is more of a Green Day contemporary. Jesus Lizard is much more of a Melvins meets Nirvana meets even Frank Black, Pixies lead singer, because his wailing and his screaming. Jesus Lizard is very kind of art punk kind of grunge mix. It's more experimental. So Down is, you know, it's a cool record to get into. And also, I think a really good contemporary to this, actually, no, a very different sound, Live Through This by Hole. Have you checked that one out?
Not really as much, no.
Okay, so obviously the main argument is that Hole is supposedly a Nirvana rip. And to a degree, I think that's kind of true. But I think Live Through This, not only is it, in my opinion, their most definitive album, their next one probably being Celebrity Skin in 1998.
Yes.
But with Live Through This, I mean, you have Violet, the opening track. That one's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Plump sounds very Nirvana. And then Miss World is just pop perfection. And then Doll mm-hmm. Parts is their big one. And there are just so many highs and lows throughout this record. I think it's Courtney Love at her best. Say what you want about her. I'm not necessarily a huge fan of her personality and all of that. But as far as like an album is concerned, like if he had no idea that it was her, most people would be like, oh, I love this album. So I feel like right. once they hear, oh, it's Courtney or oh, it's Hole, you know, then they immediately dismiss this. But this one, in my opinion, also like the Blue Album, this one is my top 100 as well.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right. I'll definitely give that a good checkout then.
It's not never mind, but in my opinion, you can make an argument. Okay. People are going to hate me for this. They're really going to hate me. You can make an argument that it's comparable to In Utero.
Mm-hmm.
Not so stylistically. It's more pop focused, like Nevermind. But I do believe that you can make an argument that Nevermind is better, but but not by much. Like this one's really good. Of course, there's no Smells Like Teen Spirit. There's no Drain You. So sure, I guess the songs don't hold a candle to that. But this is a fantastic effort, and I don't know if it's their second or third record, but this is a really really good one. So yeah.
All right, definitely check that out for sure. Like I said, I love being put on to new stuff or even just stuff that's new to me. More on the like true grunge side there, you have Jar of Flies by Alice in Chains, which is an EP, I believe. I don't even think it's actually a full album. I think it's an EP.
I believe that Jar of Flies actually is a full-on record, to be honest.
Oh,
yeah, it's right, a full-on record. Yep, With No Excuses is like the big one.
But also Nutshell is on this album too, which both of those songs, but specifically Nutshell, has gotten a lot of resurgence through TikTok. It's very interesting, actually. I think Alice in Chains in general has become a bit TikTok-ized in a little bit of a way.
Yep.
Well, because there are a lot of memes about people, you know, who are, you know, drunk in their shower singing to Rooster or whatever, you know.
It's that grunge aesthetic brought up by kind of in part by Billie Eilish as far as like visual style, the 90s hip hop look.
Yeah.
But Olivia is the one
yeah
that kind of brought that back.
yeah, you want to talk about like completely opposite sides of the spectrum there in terms of rock, but
the aesthetic, I guess, if you will.
Yeah, I get what you're saying though, but and it's cool to have Alice in Chains get some popularity and get some flowers and have a bunch of people, you know, who may have not really appreciated them get into them again. But it is just, you know, there are a lot of hardcore Alice in Chains fans who are a little bit peeved about them being so prominent on TikTok and how their songs are just, you know, showing up on the app in a lot of different ways. But more on like that true grunge side, because there are just a lot of releases in that genre. Vitalogy by Pearl Jam came out in this year.
So Better Man's a lead one, and Corduroy, I think, is my favorite track on this album.
Yeah, and amongst the Pearl Jam fans, I would say, I think right along with 10, I think a lot of people generally like this record as the best Pearl Jam record.
You have me down there because I'm not a 10 fan, so I'm a Vitalogy guy.
Okay, so good to know. I thought 10 was pretty solid, but I mean, like...
No. 10 is the pick for most people. I'm just kind of swimming against the flow, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, Vitalogy, yeah. Like, but in terms of when you're talking like a definitive Pearl Jam record, it's usually...
Either 10 or Versus, I think, right?
That's true. That's true. A lot of people go to Versus as well.
Yeah, no one cares about Vitalogy. I'm just like the odd one out here.
That's not true. People do care about Vitalogy. You're a real fan because you like Vitalogy.
No, that's not fair. No, I don't like PJ that much.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy because like I'm not big on the album, but Evenflow, we've said it over and over. It's such a good song. I mean, that hooks me in. Yeah. I can't hate that song. It's, in my opinion, it's their best song. I mean, you could argue Jeremy is because it's more sensitive and tender, but I think Evenflow is their best
track. Evenflow is a banger. So,
oh my gosh, so good.
And then you have Stone Temple Pilots with Interstate Love Song. Purple is the album that came off of kind of more grunge, but a little bit different than the offerings from Nirvana or Alice in Chains at the time. You know, rest in peace to Scott Weiland, I believe, who was the lead singer.
Yeah.
Definitely a little more groove focused, I think, on those albums.
You know, very similar to, I know like sound wise, kind of like Vetter, but honestly, their progressive sound is very similar to Soundgarden, how interesting their compositions are and how much diversity there is in their playing. I'd have to say that those two bands,
yeah,
because Nirvana weren't very progressive. They were more straightforward, bare bones stuff, right? Yes. And then Smashing Pumpkins, they kind of got into the more conceptual album territory. And so they did play around a little bit more. And of course, because, you know, with one of the greatest drummers of all time. So that's part of it. But I do think that with Stone Temple Pilots and Soundgarden, yeah, I'd say that both of those bands were more progressive in their grunge-esque styles.
Yeah, and speaking of Soundgarden, they had a huge release this year as well with Super Unknown. You had some pretty big singles on this. Black Hole Sun is the one that everyone goes to. Funny enough, a lot of these songs, I think, ended up in like either Rock Band or Guitar Hero or both, because I think that's where I heard this originally.
Right.
But there's some other great songs on this record too. I mean, Spoon Man, Fell on Black Days. Overall, it's just a really dope album in terms of definitely more on the grunge side, the, you know, more progressive groove based aspect.
This is extremely consistent, this record.
Oh yeah. And the mix on it is really good as well, especially with the remasters.
Oh yeah.
It sounds really, really good. And oddly enough, I think Chris Cornell got interviewed and said basically that with Black Hole Sun, he tried to combine, what was it, Cream and the Beatles, I think, or something.
Oddly enough, I hear it.
Yeah, because it's kind of psychedelic, but the melody is kind of more in like a Beatle-ish side, especially like the later Beatles.
You know, it makes sense because, yeah, especially the latter Beatles. I agree with you. Concerning this one, coming off of Bad Motorfinger from 91, Bad Motorfinger was also more kind of like in-your-face hard rock. And it was a lot more metal focused, which, you know, it's less poppy than Super Unknown. Super Unknown was basically them with Bad Motorfinger, but adding a lot more pop elements to it, and then even adding more progressive elements to it. So I think I like Super Unknown because it's just extremely consistent. And it's a fantastic, because what, Bad Motor was their sophomore. So this is their third, I believe.
I think that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot their 89 record. I've listened to it before, but I forgot the name.
Isn't it Temple of the Dog or something? Or?
No, it's another name. I think it has the word love in it.
Okay.
Let's see. Now I'm going to look it up.
Yeah.
Louder Than Love. I got one word.
Oh, there you go. I mean, yeah. No, definitely. Super Unknown, definitely one of the better grunge releases of the era. Nirvana with MTV Unplugged in New York also dropped this year. I think that is the MTV Unplugged, I don't want to say to end all MTV Unplugged because they kept going with it afterward.
But it kind of was.
But really, yeah. I mean, it didn't really get much like bigger than that, especially with, you know, the look of everything, with just kind of how, at least at the time, I think people were pretty surprised with how well their Nirvana songs actually translated into an acoustic environment. And you had a great Bowie cover in here of Man Who Sold the World.
Oh, yeah, that's the one that you were referring to, the cover, which, you know, like I said, I prefer Trevor's Hurt. But actually, in this case, I prefer Nirvana's Man Who Sold the World.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I think Nirvana's is definitely, I prefer it too, I think.
And you have like, I think, two or three Meat Puppet covers in this as well?
Yeah, they have quite a bit of covers in here, as well as their originals. But it's just an overall great acoustic set from, you know, arguably the biggest band in the world at that time. So can't go wrong there. Speaking of big bands in the world at that time, Oasis with Definitely Maybe.
I said maybe.
Yeah.
I think it's funny how that was a precursor to that track.
With Supersonic and Live Forever. I mean, basically, Definitely Maybe and What's Going On, Morning Glory are, you know, the staples of 90s rock. I mean, I prefer Morning Glory a bit more than Definitely Maybe, just because I think the singles on Morning Glory are really heavy hitters. Mm-hmm. And I think I just prefer the singles a bit more. But I know a lot of
Definitely Maybe is like more their edgier pick.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah. I'd say the true Oasis fans are probably going to lean more into a Definitely Maybe, I think.
I agree.
Just because with Morning Glory and how Wonderwall became a meme and how some of these other like songs became a meme, I think you'll have a lot more folks who are going to be into the Definitely Maybe edgier type of sound. Don't get me wrong, though. I mean, those were still pretty big, you know, songs and singles at the time, but they definitely did have more of an edge to them and not necessarily as like Britpop focused as
I said maybe. Yeah, it's a good album, you know. I'm not a huge Oasis guy either, but these two albums are, especially Morning Glory, but this one Definitely Maybe for sure is, it's a 90s classic.
Yeah, most definitely. And you have their arch rival who put out a album as well with Blur's Park Life at that time as well. There was a bit of a feud between these two bands for a little while.
I love the Greyhounds in the cover.
Yeah. 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 I personally don't think that Blur like really came into their own until like a little bit later.
I feel the same way. I think Park Life is kind of easy to like because it's Blur and it's now 30 years old, but I won't lie. This album doesn't do it for me. The good thing about Blur is how experimental they are. They don't really stick to one thing. And I think that's a good reason why Damon basically did Gorillaz, because he just couldn't stick to one thing. So
right.
I think that's like how different they are is what made Gorillaz Gorillaz.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say. Once you started talking about experimentation angle of things. And then you had REM as well with Monster of an album there.
Binging Blame is a good track on this one. That's my pick.
Yeah. Definitely not as big as the album that preceded it, I think, which that's the one that had like Losing My Religion and all that stuff on there, right?
Yeah. And Monster's not a big album. It really is not. It's not. And it doesn't have like Orange Crush. Like it doesn't have songs like that on this.
Right.
And in fact, Monster was more when REM was starting to sound like the bands that ripped them off, to be honest. In my opinion, they lost a little bit of their REM edge that made them unique. So I felt like now they're starting to sound more like, you know, Hootie, all these, you know, even Cranberries. I don't know. There's just something about this record, about Monster, where they're just sounding like the people that kind of play after them.
Yeah. And then, I mean, those are some of the really big heavy hitters in here. Oh, but we forgot about the Cranberries. No Need to Argue as well.
What is it? Ode to My Family? Is that the name of the track on this?
Yes. And then Zombies on here, too, which was, I think, kind of a bigger single as well. I don't think this is as definitive as Everyone Is Doing It or whatever.
That's the one with Linger on it, right?
Yeah. Everyone is doing it. Why should we? Or something like that.
Right. Now, Zombie is their biggest track. That's clearly the... Or is it Linger? I think Zombie's way bigger. Like, that's huge.
I don't know, dude. I mean, they're both pretty big. It just depends on the vibe, I think.
The person.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Dolores, rest in peace. Really, 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 really great vocalist. I just don't like Zombie. I cannot stand it. But Ode to My Family, I love. So it's weird how that works.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the same. I mean, I think Zombie's a pretty, like, solid rock track, but I do get what you're saying in that.
It's kind of overdone, you know? Like, there's too much Dolores in it, but Ode to My Family, she just, like, tames it perfectly, and I just like it. But, of course, it's not going to be a hit, so I get it.
Sure, yeah. And, I mean, I think, like I said, on the opposite side of that, you do have a lot of people who love Linger, too, just for it being, like, you know, ballad. Oh, yeah. And the orchestration on that song, too, is what
I like Linger, actually. I do like Linger.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice acoustic ballad of stuff, so
live Throwing Copper with lead sing, well, the big one, Lightning Crashes, but that's very, you know, that's, you know, good record and good band.
Yeah, live was kind of more of like they were kind of more grand in their sound, right? Kind of more like a stadium type of sound.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah,
I'm not uber familiar with them, but I mean, I've heard a couple of tracks that they've done, and I think that they're overall a pretty solid band. Let's see who else here. Bush came out with 16 Stone.
So they were always considered the British Nirvana ripoff, but it's true. It's super true. I also like their I think it's Razorblade Suitcase, their 1996 effort.
Yeah.
Which, dude, Bush honestly was one of my favorite bands. Golden State in 2001. This is not really people's favorites, but I like it a lot. 16 Stone. I think Glycerin is annoying. I don't think it's that great. I think it's kind of like, I get, you know, whatever. You like it, whatever. But I like Everything Zen, yeah. Machine Head, and Come Down is my favorite. And by the way, if you understand the sound of Come Down, you can hear a little bit of that Jesus Lizard and that Melvin sound. So
yeah, I'm definitely familiar with Machine Head. I think that was another, once again, I think it was another song that was on like Rock Band or Guitar Hero or something.
Trying to think.
They pulled a lot of songs from the 90s.
They always sing like this.
Yeah, I've noticed they pulled a lot of songs from the 90s, but I have to give those games credit in the sense that they did put me on to what in my estimation, especially as time has gone on, is a lot of great music actually that I may have not really gotten around to just on my own, especially at that time.
Yeah, I really like Bush. They're a good band.
Yeah, and oddly enough, their frontman was married to Gwen Stefani for a while. So,
Somehow not surprised.
Yeah, and then they split after having a couple kids, and now she's with Blake Shelton, which is just kind of the total opposite direction of things. But
there are like two other, or actually three other big ones, but Diary by Sunny Day Real Estate, mm-hmm. emo classic. I think this is around the second wave of emo, because the first wave was late 80s, early 90s. Now we're kind of to the mid 90s to the late 90s kind of second emo wave. And then, you know, Paramore and bands like that would pick up in a third wave. So, you know, Nate Mendel, right?
Yes.
So Nate Mendel and then William Goldsmith, who would later be part of Foo Fighters. And then Goldsmith, obviously, you know about that, where he got out of the band kind of in a weird way. But Nate Mendel is still with Foo Fighters. Unfortunate that Taylor is gone. But anyway, Nate Mendel and Will are both in this record. And Seven and In Circles are the big ones of Diary. Seven's a good track. In Circles is emo perfection. This is the time when emo is becoming more poetic. It's becoming more nuanced. It's also it's no American Football, because that's your more Midwest sound. I believe Sunny Day Real Estate are from the Northwest, but this one is just emo perfection. I think everyone needs to check out this album.
Uh-huh. Definitely. Oh, Pink Floyd put out a record too with Division Bell.
Yes.
To be honest with you, I'm not super familiar with that record outside of, once again, memes that people make on it.
It is very memed. That album cover is just asking to be memed.
Yeah, especially with Pink Floyd. And I do know that, like, you know, amongst the Pink Floyd fans, a lot of them did end up liking Division Bell.
Of course.
But some people really didn't. So I guess it was quite divisive.
I was waiting for that too. Good one. Okay, let's go through these. So Second Coming, Stone Roses, not huge on it. To be honest, I've never really been a big Stone Roses guy. I think they're big ones, like from 89, right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
But this is an album by them. B-1000, Guided by Voices. There's that. His and Hers, Pulp. Holy Bible by Manic Street Preachers with their lead single, Yes. That one's a pretty well-known one. And then Let's Go, Rancid.
Yeah.
Stranger Than Fiction, Bad Religion. You have Punk and Drublic by NOFX.
Yes.
Now this one's really good. So There's Nothing Wrong with Love, Built to Spill. That's more in your Pavement and kind of Meat Puppet sound. Car, Twin Falls, Big Dipper, a really good release. And this one, they kind of brought in a more poppiness, like an upbeat feeling to this, but this is more slacker rock.
Uh-huh.
And the next one, Crooked Rain by Pavement. This one is really, really good. Cut Your Hair, Gold Sounds. You can hear a lot of almost like Creedence Clearwater or a slight Eagles in this. There's a pretty heavy 70s sound in this. Meat Puppets would do stuff like that as well. So Crooked Rain is really good. Too High to Die by Meat Puppets, Backwater, the lead single. That one is probably Meat Puppets' biggest album. Rubberneck, Toadies. That's a Pixies contemporary type album. Possum Kingdom, you've heard that one. I think it's a fantastic song. The lead singer, I forgot his name, he had said that he likes the mystery around that song. A lot of people almost theorize that he was writing it off of real events, and he just kind of wanted to keep the mystery of it. So it's really eerie, but it's probably one of the most catchy riffs of the 90s. And then Tyler, also a big one on Rubberneck Toadies. And then the same sound, Frank Black. This is his second album after leaving the Pixies. Teenager of the Year, Headache is the lead track there. It's more Frank Blackness. What more could you want? And I think this was less popular than the one that he released right after the Pixies. So,
yeah. And then America by the Black Crowes. Black Crowes was huge at this time. They had more of kind of a Southern rock aspect to them.
Definitely.
So if you're really into Southern rock, like your Lynyrd Skynyrd, your Outlaws.
Yeah, very outlaw. Yeah.
That would be the band to listen to. Tom Petty put out a record as well with Wildflowers.
This is a really good one too. I really like this record.
Yes, I do as well. I mean, in terms of Petty picks, my pick is still Full Moon Fever. Yes, it's going to be basic. Yes, but that album just plays so well though. And it's just like with Free Fallen, Love's a Long Road, and all those ones. I mean, it's stacked.
Very stacked.
With as far as albums are concerned, but this is also really great as well. Neil Young put out something. I'm not really the biggest fan of Neil Young, but it is worth mentioning.
What was it? Harvest Moon?
Yeah.
It's 72, right?
Yeah, that was the one that really got him into the mainstream.
You could argue it's really his good one, you know, So
yeah, I've never gotten into them. I've really tried, but I just never have gotten into them. I don't know if it's his voice or I don't know if it's just the music itself, but I just could never really get into it. Clapton put out From the Cradle as well, with Motherless Child being a huge hit off of this one. Actually, he put out an MTV Unplugged in the 90s too. I don't think it was 94, but he did put one out in the 90s, which had a pretty good rendition of Layla on it that is actually more arguably almost as popular as the original,
right?
With the acoustic version. And then you had some other releases from some legacy acts. You had like Voodoo Lounge from Rolling Stones with Love is Strong. Ben Harper is an artist that's interesting.
Oh, he's kind of like a precursor to Jack Johnson. This is a really good record too.
Yeah, no, Ben Harper is someone who I think is actually really underrated. So
yeah, this one's really good.
Madonna with Bedtime Stories and Secret. That's kind of the 90s Madonna era. Not quite as big as the stuff in the 80s.
And not even cares about 90s Madonna.
Well, except if it's like Vogue. Thing. Yeah. Like Vogue was the thing. Because that had more of like the drum and bass.
Of course.
Electronic type sound. Tori Amos
with Under the Pink, Cornflake Girl, you know, classic pop rock hit.
Yep. And I'm not too familiar with that last one with Amplify.
Okay. So Amplified Heart, Everything But the Girl. I love Missing. That's a really good track. They kind of get into a little bit of the electronica sound. They also did, I think they debuted in 82, 84, and they do a little bit of that jangle pop stuff. So heavily influenced by Morrissey. And I think even slightly on the music side, Billy Joel, because that more kind of New York jazz style. So they've done that. And then American Thighs by Verusha Salt, Seether. That's like the big, big one. Classic grunge pop hit.
Yeah.
And then Vauxhall and I, Morrissey, The More You Ignore Me, The Closer I Get. That's probably one of the most Morrissey titled tracks.
Yeah.
And then Motorcade of Generosity, Cake's debut, as well as Emmerdale, which happens to be the Cardigans debut also. And then you have Fake by Adorable, which is My Bloody Valentine contemporary. And this is their sophomore as well as their second and their last release. It was released after Against Perfection, their debut, which had Homeboy on it. One of my, probably my favorite track by Adorable, but they had a 2-album run and that was it. This next one, Rochambeau, a favorite album of mine, almost comparable with Weezer's Blue. I would say these are the two most important albums for me for 1994. Aside from Illmatic, so probably add 3 records. There might be some more, but these are the 3 that really come to me, that come to my mind. So Rochambeau by the Grays, headed by John Bryan, Jason Faulkner, who are from other bands. John Bryan, Jason Faulkner from Jellyfish. Well, he supported Jellyfish, but these two are the main guys. Buddy Judge, another vocalist and guitarist, and then Dan McCarroll, who's on drums. So Jason and John, the lead songwriters of this album, Jason heads Very Best Years. John heads Same Thing. Faulkner heads Friend of Mine, which is my favorite track on this record. This is a power pop album. It's very reminiscent of, so I mentioned Jellyfish. It's somewhat reminiscent of Black Crowes, definitely reminiscent of the Posies, Oasis, Elliot Smith, the Beatles, as well as Badfinger, you know, another Beatles contemporary. Big Star, who are big pioneers of power pop. And then, of course, I mentioned Weezer. This has a little bit of a college radio sound. And pretty much this album being their first and their only record due to the songwriters having issues, namely John and Jason. I kind of like Jason's songwriting on this album probably a little bit more than John's. But I think John and Jason, you know, they're a really good pairing as far as artistically is concerned, but it just didn't work for them between each other. So it's kind of like the Pixies. They just kind of end up going their separate ways. But again, only one album out of their entire career, because I think it was either John or Jason that didn't even want to start a band to begin with because of the typical problems that bands have, and then they disband. So a very ironic start and finish. But I think this is a hidden gem of the 90s. And then you also have Manilow by Smudge, kind of similar to Lemonheads, and also very similar to Toe the Wet Sprocket, who are also on the very end of this list. You got Magnified by Failure. That's her sophomore release. Very much like Jesus Lizard, very sludgy, a lot like Melvin's in Hum. And then you have Carnival of Light by Ride, Dogman Star, The London Suede, We Are the Pigs. I do like that track as well. And then Dulcinea, yeah. Toad, The Wet Sprocket. They're an REM rep, but Dulcinea is pretty good. So, yeah.
All right. So that covers 94. Stay tuned next time for 2004, which is also stacked as well.
Super stacked. I'll probably do a multiple parts too.
Multiple parts in that as well. Work Tape Podcast, Money Mitchell, Isaac Grover. Stay well with one another and peace out.
Peace.